change the way we approach the rest of the world. So I want to thank you, Michael, for the work that you do, and thanks for being on Activist Radio. Yeah.
Thank you, Fred, and I hope that some of your listeners will actually donate so that we can build the U.S. Peace Memorial.
That sounds so good. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
a lot.
Much.
Bye now. Activist Radio can be heard Thursdays 5 to 6 p.m. on WVKR 91.3 FM at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Sundays 4 to 5 p.m. on WIOF 104.1 FM in Woodstock, New York. And Sundays 5 to 6 p.m. from the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Past shows can be heard on ClassWars.org. Please like our Facebook page or read our ClassWars blog for commentary on today's interview. We'll be here next week at the same time to help you become part of the resistance.
Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO's Slavic Community Hour is looking for new collective members. The Slavic Community Hour is an interactive news, talk, and music program focused on Portland's Ukrainian and Russian community. No experience is required, just an enthusiasm for Slavic culture and a desire to learn. If you speak Ukrainian or Russian and have an interest in community radio, please reach out to program at kboo.org to learn more. That's program at kboo.org.
KBOO's Board of Directors is delighted to invite all KBOO members to the annual membership meeting and Board of Directors elections. The meeting will be held on Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. A Zoom link and call-in access will be provided to those who are unable to attend in person. This is the opportunity for all members to meet the candidates, get station updates, and make their voices heard. Again, that's KBOO's annual membership meeting and Board of Directors elections, Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2022.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series starting Saturday, September 17th with singer-songwriter Tim Grimm. The Folk Music series of 9 Saturday concerts starts September 17th and continues through May of 2023 at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele. Season tickets are now available. Ticket information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events.
Oh, what a world! KBOO 90.7. Tasha T. said that.
Welcome back to Roll on the Rocks, a limited series podcast, where I take you through what abortion access looked like in America and the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe. Last time on the show, I spoke with a legal expert at the ACLU of Florida about the state's 15-week abortion ban, a ban that has now been in effect since July. Before Roe was overturned, as states like Texas were passing abortion bans, many women and people who can become pregnant turned to virtual healthcare services, also known as telehealth. Today I'm speaking with Robin Tucker, a clinician with Aid Access, the only organization that currently provides abortion pills through telehealth in all states throughout the U.S., including states where abortion is banned or seriously restricted. Now here's Robin Tucker in our conversation that was recorded last spring about how the service works.
So Aid Access is a bunch of clinicians like me. Some of us are based in the U.S., and we prescribe for whatever patients do an online consult with Aid Access who are in the state we are licensed in. So I do Virginia and Maryland and Maine, prescriptions. And there is a clinician in Europe that handles the consults for patients who are in the more restrictive states. And so she is operating under the laws where she lives, and she's protected. So the prescription is written from a clinician outside the U.S. and it's sent from a pharmacy outside the U.S. So we're the only organization that's currently operating that is sending pills to all of the states.
Getting into the abortion pills themselves, there are all kinds of information and misinformation out there. Can you explain how misoprostol and then misoprostol, how they each work? From what I understand from previous conversations with clinicians, it's a two-step pill process. So yeah, if you could just explain how that works.
Yeah, so misoprostol is a progesterone blocker. So what it does is it has a molecule in it that binds to your progesterone receptors so that progesterone doesn't get to the placenta to continue the pregnancy. And so that's step one. The misoprostol works by causing uterine contractions. And it's funny, we actually use misoprostol as well to induce people's labor when they're giving birth, for example. So it's a widespread use medication, but it basically makes the uterus contract. And so it kind of makes everything come out.
Got it. And there's all, like I said earlier, there's different kinds of misinformation out there. And a very core and consistent thing I've heard from medical providers who specifically work in gynecology or reproductive health care is that these two pills that we're discussing right now, in their words, are incredibly safe and safer than other commonly used medication taken every day, like Tylenol. Can you kind of expand on that? I think a lot of folks who either don't have the personal experience or don't know a lot about this subject in regards to abortion healthcare think of these as very scary forms of medication.
Right. And it sounds, abortion is very taboo.
Right.
And so it sounds kind of crazy, that one of the medications would be safe. A lot of the blocks on this drug have been due to political issues and not necessarily due to the safety record. And you can go to the FDA website and review, all of the information that they looked at about risk compared to that and some other medications. And it's very educational. Just the number of people who've had adverse events is so low. Most of the side effects from these pills are uncomfortable or unusual for the person experiencing them, but not medically dangerous.
And at the same time, you know, something that I've read in research is that as much as organizations like yours is a form of expanding access, it is not necessarily an option for everyone in terms of medical conditions, like someone who might have a bleeding disorder. Can you talk about how this organization, those like yours, is providing an essential form of access, but at the same time, there are still barriers for folks seeking abortion healthcare services.
Yes, and you know, pills aren't perfect for everyone. You know, they're not going to help in every scenario. One thing, like you talked about bleeding disorders. If you have a bleeding disorder, it's most likely safer for you to have a procedure, because then when the tissue comes out, they can monitor what your body's doing and make sure you're not losing too much blood. And with a medication abortion, the tissue works its way out, you know, and you're not, you don't have anyone kind of watching your blood loss. And so it can be more optimal to have that done. There's a couple of other things, like if someone has a sensitivity to prostaglandins, they shouldn't take these pills. If they have, you know, an allergy to any of the medicines, they shouldn't take these pills. If they have any adrenal conditions or like chronic steroid use, they shouldn't take these pills. There's a few things like that. But they're not very common. Most people can take these pills safely. The contraindications are not extremely common.
And something that I've heard, I understand you're coming from a clinician standpoint, obviously, and not necessarily as an activist in any way, but if you can speak to my next question. Something I've heard from folks who are anti-abortion is that the upcoming decision on the Mississippi Supreme Court case is that, as we are most likely going to see Roe either overturned or very much weakened, that the impact won't be that great given organizations like yours, where abortion pills are going to be, and already are, very accessible. Basically that this is a non-issue. Can you speak from your experience at Aid Access and even before that? What would your response be to that sort of mindset, that this is a non-issue because with modern day technology, menstruators, folks who become pregnant, have so much access already?
Well, I disagree that it's a non-issue, because I think something that is a big deal right now is how confused people are. We get lots of clients who have no idea what's legal anymore. Even if they're in a state without a lot of restrictions, they have no idea. All they've read is like abortion's illegal now. So there's a lot of confusion about that. There's a lot of confusion about what exactly is illegal in Texas and what is going on in Texas. Just from a layperson's perspective, you know, because a lot, these legal situations are actually complex, and trying to explain that the Texas law is different because the enforcement mechanism is the citizens instead of the government, actually you lose people already. They don't understand what is legal and what's not already. So I feel like making it more restricted, I think no matter what happens, there's going to be more confusion on behalf of the clients, and that's really unfortunate. But I also feel like there's kind of a chilling effect where people, even in protected states, are kind of afraid. Like, people don't want to tell people in the ER that they took pills, even if they're in a state where it's perfectly legal. And it's, you know, because they read about this stuff going on. And I think to a normal person, it's inconceivable that Texas you know, would be that different than living here, because we're all in America, you know, and that's happening in modern day America. So I think there's a lot of people are very afraid. And so I think it'll create even more of a chilling effect of people being afraid that they'll be found out. People are, we've had a large surge in people obtaining the medications before they're pregnant, because they're afraid of what is going to happen.
And is that something that Aid Access can provide by?
Yes.
Okay. So you could essentially stock up on as much as you could, as you would like, or as much as that is offered.
Right. So, and we do advise people who get pills in advance that that they should fill out a consult if they when they do get pregnant, so that, you know, because they're paying for the pills and the clinician consult. You know, then once you get pregnant, you're still our patient. We've supplied the pills. We can help you make sure your dating is correct for the pregnancy, make sure you're still a good candidate to safely take the pills. So that's kind of the guidance that we're giving people. And, you know, it's, I think a lot of people in states where it's potentially a little less safe, like there's still abortion access, but it's kind of hanging on a thread, like Virginia, people are very afraid. There's a lot of those people getting pills before they're pregnant. And, you know, we explain what our recommendation is, and that's, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, no, I think that was an important clarification that you made.
Yeah.
Which is that it's not like ordering, you didn't put it this way, but I'm kind of taking from what you just said, which is it's not like ordering, say, something on Amazon where it's a one-time transaction. Right. You know, there, you state you are a clinician working with a patient, so there's ongoing conversation and checking in,
right? So we like to differentiate this service from places like if you go to Plan C, you can see in every state they have like direct to consumer pharmacy options where you can order your pills, you can just purchase them from an overseas pharmacy and have them mailed. And so we're a little different because everybody who gets a consult with us, it's reviewed medically by our clinician team. And it's prescribed. So we kind of, we feel like it's not necessarily better, because sometimes people do need to go get the pills the other way, but it's different in that it's a medical care consult you're purchasing and not just pills.
For sure. And I think that's also important for listeners to understand that, you know, I think a lot of folks might be kind of skeptical at first without some of this context that you're providing, that, oh, you know, people right. are taking these pills, there's no sort of medical supervision or oversight, however you would like to put that.
Right.
You know, basically that something could go wrong and no one would know.
Yeah, and there is kind of a perception that getting abortion pills online, even from a clinician consult, there's kind of a perception that it's sketchy. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of education. Plan C has been doing a lot of education to try and kind of counter that idea. Because, you know, I offer these services with Aid Access, and I also have an office I work in, and, you know, like a bricks and mortar clinic, you know, so it's not, for example, like I just we're one of work against is the idea that getting your pills online after working with a clinician is inferior than going to an office.
And then I'd like to go into something a little different. You mentioned earlier about folks having, like, folks who are in states maybe like mine. I'm reporting from Oregon, Portland, Oregon, that states like mine, there are folks who are going to the hospital and needing medical attention. They're experiencing maybe some type of complication, but they're not sharing what that is about, specifically related to abortion, because of the fear of what's going on across the country. Can you talk about what there are some common barriers that you see with your patients, whether that be financial, geographical?
We do see a lot of financial barriers. I see a lot of people who waited and they're like almost at the end of the window to get a medication abortion because they've been waiting to get the money together. Mm-hmm. And like Aid Access is a pay what you can model. So like if you say I need an abortion and I only have $20, then we only charge you $20. And so something I really try and encourage people to not think of it as like I'm trying to save up for it, because it's really better for you to be able to figure it out sooner rather than later. And the organizations are able to work with you. There's abortion funds if you go to other clinics. But I would say getting emergency care, some of it, you know, I feel like even in states where people are not restricted from abortion access as much, people still report that they're treated pretty badly if they tell people that they took pills after getting a telehealth consult. I think a lot of the medical establishment has not really caught up to what's going on in the reproductive health landscape. But the thing I tell people is there's no drug test, there's no tox screen for these medications. Like there's literally no such thing. And there's no way that we would be able to tell that you took them unless you disclose that. So, you know, what you're doing is inducing a miscarriage. And if you go get care at an ER, there is no way for them to tell if that is a miscarriage that happened on its own or if it was a miscarriage that happened after you took pills.
That's interesting. That's something I've read in other reports, specifically The Atlantic magazine. And their mm-hmm. recent reporting is that folks are going in and have gone in previous years. That it's become very common for folks who are needing immediate medical attention to not say they're having an abortion and to instead saying they're experiencing a miscarriage. And then, as you just said, they both look the same, whether you just try to self-induce an abortion or experiencing a miscarriage, that medically they look the same for the most part.
Right. And, you know, if people are uncomfortable, what they feel like is, you know, lying, you know, I've told people, you can say, you know, hey, I was pregnant, I had a positive pregnancy test, now I'm having all this bleeding. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's lots of ways to approach that. You know, but the risks of having a miscarriage are identical to the risks of having a medication abortion, at the same gestational age. You know, it's really, the management is the same medically. The concerns are the same medically. So there's not necessarily any reason that anyone would need to know.
And you mentioned that you have heard quite often that folks in states where abortion is legal, that folks are having negative interactions with medical providers. Can you talk more about what that is, what you've heard?
Yeah.
And you said that there needs to be essentially some reform, that there needs to be some education on the part of the medical field.
Yes. Well, one of the things that we worry about most, and by we, I mean people in the abortion spaces, you know, we anticipate seeing greater numbers of people self-managing, either with pills or in other ways, and obtaining medical care and having these medical providers not want to treat them if they're in an aiding and abetting state, or possibly not having experience managing abortion and not sure how to manage the complications. You know, so we're trying to improve just the basic competency level of people following up on abortion care, where even if it's not self-managed abortion, maybe it's telehealth abortion that where the person doesn't live close to the provider. Like if I had a patient in a very rural area of Virginia that was nowhere near me and couldn't come to me for follow-up, you know, it wouldn't. It's very interesting to me how providers just don't want to have anything to do with it if the person says they took abortion pills, but they would treat someone with a miscarriage, which is the same bodily process, without a second thought. So it's just one of those things we're trying to get more people on board with. There's a perception that since this is a complication of an abortion, you should go to the original person. But if someone is worried that they need emergency care, you can't just send them back to, you know, you're kind of under an obligation to take care of them. But I've had people kind of say, oh, you just got pills off the internet then, huh? Like, you know, and people are like, oh, but I talked to a clinician, I worked with a, it's very interesting.
And kind of on that note, you know, we aren't talking about anyone in a specific community other than someone who is experiencing a complication with a self-managed abortion or miscarriage. But I'm wondering, can you kind of expand on what that's like for someone who may be in an already underserved and mistreated community, often mistreated community, like someone who is a person of color or LGBTQ? How something like aid access helps kind of mitigate maybe some of those experiences with unkind medical professionals.
Well, and the thing we have to remember is that most of the people getting abortions already have kids. And so these are people who would have to find childcare, potentially take time off of work, potentially get transportation to another area. Just a lot of things that would go into the process of having an abortion before the telehealth was a reality. We get so many people who are just so appreciative of the fact that they didn't have to, you know, go to a clinic, walk past protesters yelling at them, you know, take time off work, have to find a babysitter, have to tell their family what's going on. All sorts of stuff that it's just more private and they feel more dignified being able to decide, you know, what day I'm doing this, when I'm doing it, while I'm at home, on my day off type of thing.
For sure. And I think, you know, like what you're talking about a lot, I've heard that consistently and read that consistently, that many folks seeking abortion healthcare services already have children.
Right.
And that this is an essential service that they need in terms of managing their own family. Something that I'm curious about, and I've heard consistently from advocacy groups and activists, is a general frustration with folks like myself who are reporting on this with kind of this naive and shocked response to what's happening or what has been happening with the U.S. Supreme Court case. And what I mean by that is a lot of advocates are saying, hey, this has been happening for decades. Roe's been chipped away at for decades now. And many folks in states throughout the country have been facing all kinds of barriers that we've been discussing, whether it be financial, geographical, childcare, and so on. Can you talk about your experience with what I'm saying in terms of there having been barriers for quite a while now, even before the Supreme Court case?
Right. So my experience, I do see a lot of people who have a lot of difficulty with the expense. You know, a lot of states, Medicaid doesn't cover it. A lot of states, you know, a lot of private insurances don't cover it, or people don't want their parents to know, have it on their insurance, that kind of stuff. So, being able to kind of meet those people where they are and say, here's what we can offer you, that really breaks down barriers. We do need to improve on some things. Like, obviously, pills are not going to be ideal for people who are unhoused, for example, like if people who don't have a safe place to take the pills. One organization that I know is actually, they have a funding program where they pay for travel expenses to Virginia, and then they pay for a local hotel for someone to pass the pregnancy after they take pills. So things like that are definitely kind of looking at further breaking down barriers, because also, like, if someone's in an abusive situation, you know, we worry that, you know, what if the pills come when the client isn't home, but their abusive partner is? You know, there are certain things where we don't have the best way of breaking down barriers, and we're kind of trying to reach as many people as we can.
Without being overly pessimistic or fear-mongering, what are the consequences of that then, with the likelihood of Roe being overturned and abortion being illegal, or effectively being illegal in many states, and there being situations like yours where accessing an abortion procedure is just in no way an option, even with states like Oregon or California and so on, where abortion is legal. What does that mean for folks?
Well, it's scary. I mean, there are places right now where I know that people go to Virginia and get pills, from over the border. Virginia borders on Tennessee, Kentucky, North Carolina, and West Virginia. And those are all extremely restrictive states. Those people are fortunate to live close to Virginia right now. But Texas is a gargantuan state, and trying to figure out how to get out of Texas to get to somewhere friendly is terrifying, because that can mean days of travel. So we do kind of anticipate more people self-managing, potentially in ways that are maybe unsafe. We're trying to promote, safe access to pills via aid access or via pharmacies. But if people don't know about it, they're not going to get them.
This is Claire Rosciato with KBOO FM, and you're listening to Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast about what abortion access looked like in America while Roe was still the law of the land. Music in this segment is Ragtime by Peerless, courtesy of Epidemic Sound. Tune in next Thursday at 9 a.m. for the last episode of this podcast, as I take you through how patients access abortion pills through telehealth, even in states that ban this online healthcare service.